you know, what's your reaction to this successful test flight?
I think it was fantastic for space exploration. This is the first time we've had a human-rated craft go beyond low Earth orbit in many decades, and it's the first step towards doing greater things.
And, you know, we were talking before, you've said some have expressed skepticism about the usefulness of Orion. Like, do we really need to go to Mars? Do we really need to go to asteroids? How do you respond to skepticism like that?
I've heard people saying that they don't think we're ever really going to use Orion to go to Mars. And my response is twofold. First, you have to remember the full name of Orion is Orion Multi-Purpose Crew Vehicle. It was designed for many different space missions beyond low Earth orbit. We can use Orion to go to the moon. We can go to the Lagrange points, like Lunar Lagrange Point number 2. And what that means, the Lagrange points are the places in space where the gravity of two different bodies and the centrifugal forces all just cancel out to make it a stable place in space. We've talked about having space stations behind the moon at the Lunar Lagrange Point number 2, for example. So Orion could go there and support that sort of an outpost. Orion can also take us on to Mars, and some of the Mars scenarios involve using Phobos, which is the lower of the two Martian moons, and we could do do expeditions where the crew is on Phobos, teleoperating equipment on the surface of Mars without the long time delay that we have from Earth, and we could do Mars surface missions as well. And the other part of my response is that the Orion Multipurpose Crew Vehicle really is a good spacecraft for Mars missions. You wouldn't want to have just that one small volume for a six-month journey to Mars, but that's not how we're going to do it. We would certainly have a landing craft, or even if we don't have the landing vehicle and the Orion go out together, we would probably have an inflatable module that Orion would be docked to, so there would be a larger amount of living space during the six-month mission, I would believe. So I think this is really a great day. It does point towards doing missions to Mars and other locations in space.
Versatility is the name of the game with a craft like Orion, correct?
It was designed with the idea that we don't have to select a destination right now. We can develop the pieces of our space architecture, and then when we start to get the pieces completed, as the budget continues to develop and as the funding year by year continues to come in, we will eventually be able to put it all together and at that time select what we're going to do. Now, we do have a definite plan right now to go to an asteroid, to visit an asteroid. And the current plan is that we will bring an asteroid back to high lunar orbit. And that's one of the things that Orion is designed to do.
Now, I want to ask you about something that was mission critical to Orion, and that was kind of twofold. One was the heat shield. They were testing the heat shield out, and also they were testing out how the vessel would react through the Van Allen belt. Can you kind of explain what happens when a vehicle travels through that Van Allen belt and what the implications could be?
We actually do experience that in a more tame manner during missions in low Earth orbit. There is a place where the Van Allen belt dips down following the magnetic field lines of the Earth, and it's over the South Atlantic Ocean. For a long time, it was called the South Atlantic Anomaly because it wasn't that well understood. But low Earth orbiting spacecraft will pass through that region and experience the effects of the radiation of the Van Allen belt. And the sort of things that we see are computer glitches. The computers will be operating fine, and then when you're passing through that region over the South Atlantic, all of a sudden the computers have a glitch. We call that single event upset. It's your typical bland engineering techno term, single event upset, or SEU. And so it took a while to understand why that was occurring, but we now know that it's from the trapped particles that are charged particles traveling around the magnetic field lines of the Earth. when you go up into the higher parts of the Van Allen Belt above the Earth, then there's a region where you've got the maximum amount of radiation. And Orion went all the way through that and beyond it, all the way to the top of the inner Van Allen Belt and then back down again. The inner Van Allen Belt is the one where you have a lot of protons, which are the heavy nuclei, and those are the ones that cause the most trouble. The upper Van Allen Belt is where there are a lot of electrons, but electrons will not penetrate through the skin of the spacecraft. When a charged particle fires at a solid material, if it's a negatively charged particle like an electron, it'll bounce off the cloud of all the electrons in that material. But if it's a positively charged particle, it'll go right between all the positive nuclei and just shoot right through the cloud of electrons. And therefore, a positive particle can go right through the skin of the aircraft, right through the box of your computer, right through the computer chip. And as it passes through the computer chip, it can turn a 1 into a 0 or a 0 into a 1. Causing that single event upset.
How do you combat that? What did Apollo do, and what are crafts like Orion doing to make sure that doesn't happen?
One thing that we do is we design redundancy into the spacecraft. So the space shuttle, for example, had 5 computers. 3 computers were running one computer program, and the other 2 computers were running the backup flight software. So we had redundant computers and redundant software. The 3 primary computers were constantly monitoring each other, and if 2 computers computed the same thing but the 3rd computer had something different, the 2 would vote out the other one. So that's one way to handle it. Another thing that we do routinely on all spacecraft is we use radiation-hardened electronics, and those are more able to resist the charged particles of space. But there's no way to perfectly solve it. It's all a matter of statistics. Eventually, you're going to be hit with enough particles in the wrong place at the same time that it can cause problems. And so you have to deal with it by using shielding, by using hardened electronics, by using redundancy where necessary. And this was part of the test of the Orion spacecraft to make sure that the design measures that they put into the vehicle were able to handle that environment. In the future, when we're going to have astronauts travel into deep space, we will be passing through the Van Allen Belt every time.
So going back to the skepticism that we were talking about earlier, do you think the excitement after a successful test flight will change some attitudes at all?
It's possible. It's possible. But I think the policymakers are focused on very significant questions. And they're not going to lose sight of the question. So I think the conversation will not be that dramatically affected by the successful flight. I wish it would be affected. I wish that the flight test would create enough public support that some of the policymakers will get more in line with the idea of doing these missions and doing more of them. I don't think this will be enough to turn the conversation around, though, but it is a step in the right direction.
What's it going to take to get that conversation to turn around?
I personally think that over the next couple of decades, as technology continues to advance, as we get more sophisticated robotics, and as space mining companies start to do actual missions in space, it's going to become apparent that space is not so impossible as we used to think it was. And people are going to more and more realize that putting human economic activity in space is not science fiction. It's something that we, the human race, are beginning to do and are going to continue to do starting now. So I think that as the next few decades go on, the conversation is naturally going to change. People are going to be more supportive of space. We're going to start to work out the ramifications of having a space economy. People are going to realize the positive, tremendously positive benefit it's going to have for humanity, and we will do this. What I would like to do is speed it along, because I would like our country to be involved at the front of this wave. I don't want us to be following along behind. I would like all the benevolent nations of this world to work together so that we have countries that respect human rights leading the way into the new space economy so that we can influence things for good here on Earth.
Now, there's also an argument when we talk about Orion possibly going to an asteroid and bringing that asteroid into lunar orbit to study it. There's an argument that that asteroid recovery mission would actually kill asteroid funding, much like Apollo did for lunar exploration. Where does the basis for this argument come from, and how would someone like you respond to that?
Yes, that's an argument that we are now talking about in planetary science circles. The issue has been raised that it could be a stunt, that the asteroid return mission might be seen as a stunt. And the bad thing about stunts is that once you've done it, then it sucks all the air out of the room. And people will say, well, we've already been to an asteroid. We don't need to do that anymore. And I don't think that's a valid argument. They say that that happened after Apollo. We did 6 missions on the surface of the moon, and after that, there were no more lunar missions for a long time. I think the fallacy in that argument is that back in those days, we didn't have nearly the robotics that we do today, and robotic missions could not compete with human missions. And we accomplished so much in those 6 human missions on the moon that it was decades before people could propose robotic missions that were going to contribute on the scale that we had already seen. We were continuing to do lunar science with the materials that had been returned from the moon already. But look at what's going on in the moon today. We have a very healthy robotic program exploring the moon. It's international. The United States has done several missions since the last couple of decades. And we have additional missions that are in the works. So I don't believe that the human missions on the moon hurt the robotic exploration of the moon. I think it only accelerated it, and it accelerated it tremendously. So what will happen with the asteroid mission when we send humans to an asteroid? Well, for one thing, it's a completely different situation. We're talking about one mission, and we're talking about one asteroid. There are a variety of asteroids. They are a tremendously diverse family of bodies. They differ in composition. They differ in their physical characteristics. We can see this remotely. And I think having one mission with humans at an asteroid is going to whet our appetite for more, and it is certainly not going to suck the air out of the room by doing so much work that the robotic missions can't compete anymore. So I don't believe that's a true argument. I don't think it's a valid argument. I think that having humans at an asteroid is going to be a tremendous boon for space science, and I think it'll create more desire to visit asteroids and do additional science.